What would you do if the mother of your two children vanished overnight? Taking your children across state lines to live with a man that you've never even met. That was the call that I received from a desperate father hundreds of miles away. He had no clue if his children were safe or if they were even alive, but he had a hunch and social media receipts to prove it. In today's episode, I pull back the curtains on how private investigators ethically go undercover. Yes, that is possible. And how I use my own Mary Kay business as a cover to make contact without raising red flags. From multiple visits to hidden truths to the boundaries of Oregon law, this case was about more than a missing mother and her children. It was about discretion, compassion, and staying within the law while uncovering the truth. This is Top Priority Chronicles, and today we're going undercover. Welcome to another episode of Top Priority Chronicles. If this is your first time watching, I welcome you and I thank you for choosing. And if you've been here before, I'd like to thank you for being a loyal watcher. Today's episode is titled Going Undercover, Tracing the Lost While Staying Legit. And today's case has to do with an out-of-state case that I was privately contracted for, a gentleman who had broken up with an ex-girlfriend, which they had two small children under the age of 2 years old. This gentleman had not been in contact with his ex after they broke up. She moved out of the state really rapidly. They were residing together in the home with their two children. And one day he came home and she had vanished with their two children. He had not been in contact with her or known the whereabouts of her children for the previous 25 days before he had contacted me. When he had contacted me, he had done some research on his own and did some social media background checking and found contact information between his ex-girlfriend and the gentleman that she was now dating. And it looks like she had made a move to the state of Oregon with the small children. The gentleman had an address. He also had specifics of what he wanted. So when he contacted me, you can just imagine the desperation of a father who hadn't seen his children for 25 days. He was very desperate and he was very emotionally driven, but he was also very, you know, he was not calm, but he was respectful and he was really diligent about following up, knowing what he wanted me to do and just being forthcoming with the information I needed to process this case. I wanted to, as when I made contact with him, because of the level of his desperation, he was asking, just there was a lot that he wanted to do, but he needed guidance from someone in the field to know what he could do within the law. And so as it is very important for me to be ethical in my practice, not only because that's just how I operate in my personal life, but being found unethical or exhibiting unethical behaviors could lead to you getting into a lot of trouble. It could extend from being warned to being fined to the extent of even losing your license and possibly being arrested. So we also want to make sure that you know what ethical standards in your line of work and making sure that you're following those. Briefly, the gentleman had an address where his family, where he believed his ex-girlfriend and his children were. And what he wanted me to do was make contact with the address. He wanted me to do a lot of surveillance work, which I traditionally don't do. And really, in this case, I did some surveillance work, but it wasn't to the extent of what Usually people want you to go and sit on a house and sit there until you get the pictures or the intel that they want. And this was a case where I was not willing to do that. I was willing to go to the address, take pictures of the address, but not sit and watch people come and go. So what I did was I made contact with the address. I knocked on the door, and this was a case that required me to go undercover. So it did not raise red flags to the young lady that she was being sought after. So this was a case that I needed to handle differently than usual. Usually I would just knock on the door and announce myself as a private investigator and say why I was coming. This was a case I did not want her to know I was a private investigator because she was being sought after her children. After I, to my satisfaction, it was shown that the ex-girlfriend didn't have a restraining order against her, the children of her father. I was then willing to follow up on doing the work and making sure there was no history of domestic violence between them. That was on record anyway. And so with that being said, I then made contact at the address. I didn't have to disguise myself, but I presented myself as a Mary Kay consultant, which I'm in my other entrepreneurial ventures, I am a Mary Kay consultant. So I just used my Mary Kay hat when I knocked on the door looking for this woman and her small children. The first time I went, I was an older male answered the door. And so I left behind my business card, and I also left behind a makeup packet kit, a little sample kit. Most women, if you've made a move really quick, sometimes a lot of the times we've left behind our makeup and we've just, you know, grabbed the basic necessities of things that we need. So I assume that she didn't have makeup, but yet she was a makeup girl because of the pictures that the boyfriend sent me. I could tell she was a makeup girl. So that card I left behind, and the makeup was a good fish hook because she did call me back. And what I offered was to give her a free makeover. So she took me up on the offer, and which gave me an opportunity to come back and not only confirm that she was there at that address, but also look inside and see if the small children were inside, which I must admit was not hard to do, because when I went back the second time, she had to cancel, but she answered the door and she had her small children in a playpen close to the door. And at one point she stopped talking to me to go deal with the crying baby. And the toddler was also in that playpen. I was able to get pictures of the children, which satisfied the father. So that was the bulk of the investigation. It was really a simple case, a matter of making contact enough times to confirm the children were there and the woman was there at that address. So I didn't have to break the law to do that. But I do want to make sure that you understand the difference of when you do go undercover and you have to use a different hat, that there are rules and statutes that govern our behavior as an investigator. The Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, which is we call the DPSST, they govern our license, and they have rules for private investigators and how we can conduct ourselves. So according to the DPSST regulations, a private investigator must not create the impression that they are connected with law enforcement or government agencies unless specifically contracted or authorized. So that means if you do undercover work, you cannot present yourself as an official authority or associated with the courts or the law enforcement. That is a violation of your against your license, and that would be a crime because you would be falsely associating yourself with an entity that you don't work for. And just to be clear, like I may have other contracts with state attorneys or federal attorneys, which makes me a federal employee or a state employee, but I cannot use that standing on another case to present myself in that light in this case. So ethical guidelines in our
going undercover as a private investigator is what they call pretexting. And pretexting is, to be direct and frank, is a way, is a form of deception. It is basically a strategy or a story that you come up with to tell someone to gather their trust and to get something, some information from them. So to be within your legal right to pretext ethically, you can pose as a salesperson, a consultant, or a similar non-official role. As long as there's no false suggestion of authority. So me posing as a Mary Kay consultant, and to be honest, which I was a Mary Kay consultant, but that was not the reason I was there. And that's the form, that is the reason for the pretext. It is to give a story, to get more information without alerting that person why you are really there. And you're not telling them why you're really there. And that's the form, that is the purpose of the pretext, to not alert them to, for the real reason why you're there. But what crosses the boundary over until unethical behavior is when you wear badges, or you show law enforcement credentials, or you claimed some sort of governmental authority, especially if you do not formally have that authority. You give a person, and you may be able to collect information that you are not authorized to, and it just creates trouble. So you never want to show badges. You never want to show any kind of law enforcement credentials or claim to have any association with a governmental authority that gives you a power and authority that you don't officially have. And so me claiming to be a Mary Kay consultant met that credentials. No false titles, no false government connection, which should not have alerted her to any connection to law enforcement. The distinction between deception and impersonation, which the impersonation is a crime and deception is basically what I did in using the pretext, is that deception involves strategy or creativity to obtain information without revealing your full intent. So basically, posing as a friendly neighbor, as a salesperson, a business professional, some way to get additional information for a person without really telling them why you're there, which is a form of deception. It is legal when done respectfully and within the appropriate boundaries. If you're not lying about who you are as a person, you're just not disclosing why you're really there. And that is the key point. This is often necessary in sensitive cases where being direct would shut down communication and potentially harm the case. And that's what we want to avoid. But impersonation, on the other hand, crosses a legal and ethical boundary. This is when someone falsely claims to be law enforcement or some associated with a government authority, and they gain trust or access to information that they are legally not entitled to have. Impersonation implies power, and it is illegal in Oregon and most other states. It's the difference between saying that I'm with Mary Kay, and I'm just stopping by because I was in the neighborhood, versus saying I'm with Child Protective Services and you must let me in. There is a stark difference between those. That distinction matters because our clients trust us to get the job done and to do it ethically and to do it legally. If we behave outside of ethical and legal boundaries, we potentially mess up a case or we cause a client more harm. And that is always a bad thing. So we want to be diligent. And sometimes if you have questions and you don't know, you can simply call and ask another investigator, or you can do legal research online. There are lots of books, lots of online legal resources dedicated to helping investigators. And you can also use DPSST as a valid resource. They are really resourceful and they are very responsive. So again, we want to always make sure that you are not putting our, you know, the clients often come to us wanting to gather information to help them start a case or make their case stronger. And so if we cause damage to them, we potentially cause problems to their future case. And that would be a bad, that, you know, leaves a bad taste in their mouth and could possibly leave you with a bad reputation. And so you never want to jeopardize your reputation by not being sure. So always, always check in with someone if you're potentially doing something that is new and that you're not sure about. There are a lot of investigators in this work and in this field, and especially in the state of Oregon, that would be willing to share their experience and their wisdom. Lastly, I believe, you know, I walked through how the case really performed. This was a short and simple case, right into the point. And I also walked you through how I was able to get the information and how easily I was able to obtain the information. And I want to say it was 2, possibly 3 visits in which I was able to get this information. So it was really a simple case. If you do, you know, if you're going to pretext and you do it right and you're not, and it's, you know, wear a hat that you already have. Don't try to go make up something. You know, I already have my Mary Kay business cards. I already had my makeup packets ready to give out. And so it just made sense to use that as a way to get my foot in the door. So women usually know women and how to make connection. If you're a woman and you're trying to make connection with a male, maybe touch bases with another. It doesn't have to be male investigator, but talk to another male on how to pretext another male. So you you do it effectively the first time and you're not trying to circle back with a whole new hat and then possibly raising suspicions. So with that being the case, I want to just say that the whole purpose of today's show was to share experience, but also talk about this idea of going undercover and or pretexting, as we as investigators call it, and how we can do that ethically and legally and effectively, and also how that can be, it can easily get us the information that we need. It does not have to be complicated. It doesn't mean go out and buy a whole uniform or outfit or a costume, but you can actually just present as you are, as a neighbor, as a business salesman, knock on the door and ask for the information that you need in an indirect way. In this way, this is how private investigators navigate and get, you know, information that we want that we may not be privy to otherwise. And I encourage, if you are hiring a licensed investigator, that you trust that they will do the job effectively and that you know that you have recourse if we don't do our job effectively. There is a, most states have a, not all states, but most states have a governing body that governs our licenses and that give you a way to have recourse or file a complaint against an investigator that may act unethically. And also, you always have law enforcement as a recourse if the investigator acts illegally and actually commits a crime, such as we talked about with impersonation. So basically, you don't have to break the law to be an effective investigator. And as a matter of fact, if you do break the law, you are an ineffective investigator and you put yourself and your business and your clients in jeopardy. We want to invite anyone who's listening today, if you've had a bad experience with an investigator, if you have questions, concerns, any information you'd like to share, I'm always open to sharing information. You can drop it down in the chat, or if you're watching this on YouTube, or you can DM me directly. You can always reach me on my website at toppriorityinvestigations.com. Drop a message. I'm always open to new subjects, new podcast title, subject ideas, and just any community feedback. So I appreciate you watching. It's always a pleasure to come in and spend time with you. And until we meet again, if you haven't already, subscribe. So whenever a new episode is posted, you're one of the first to find out. Share this episode with friends and family, anybody you think may be interested in watching it, or just share it on your timeline. Any repeating or sharing would be greatly appreciated. And I hope to see you again. And at Top Priority Investigations, our mission is not just to find out the truth. We take pride in doing it the right way. So if you need any help with anything, if Top Priority can just be offer any information, feel free to reach out. We are just an information request away. TopPriorityInvestigations.com, or watch the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. Till we meet again.